Thanks very much indeed, David, and nice to be here this evening. So, first thing to say is, I don't think anyone can really define what a public sector research establishment is. So there's no accurate definition, and whether they are the same as national laboratories, I don't know. But let me, in the absence of a definition, just give some examples. So the National Physical Laboratory is based in Teddington. It has a site in the northeast, it has a site, another site in the south, and it has a site in Scotland. And it was set up to look at the science of metrology. It was set up in 1900. It has done a lot of important work in the early days of computing. It was the place that made the first atomic clock in 1955 on cesium. It's worked on packet switching, quantum. And when I was at GlaxoSmithKline, we had a collaboration with the NPL on imaging mass spectrometry, which is a very difficult technology to quantify. And that was crucial for us in the industry to try and get some imaging of where drugs were going into cells. Another example, which is in York, FERA, which is on this list here, which is the Food and Environment Research Agency, or was, it used to be a DEFRA PSRE, and it was transferred to become a public-private joint venture in 2015. Used to house the Plant Health Inspectorate and the National Bee Unit, and yes, I didn't know there was a National Bee Unit either. Which are now at the Animal, Plant, and Health laboratories. And FERA remains, despite the fact it's now actually an independent private organization, remains a national reference laboratory, and it's part of the National Laboratory Alliance, something I'll come back to in just a minute. During the Novichok poisonings, if you will remember that, after the poisonings themselves, there was a question about cleanup of the environment, and it turned out the ability to access mass spectrometry to understand what the measure, well, to make the measurements in the environment was pretty difficult, and FERA became a really important resource during that national emergency. Let's take another one, the Met Office down in Exeter. And of course, the Met Office deals with weather, but actually, during Mrs. Thatcher's government, the Hadley Centre was set up, which moved the Met Office into also having a world-class climate science activity, which has been hugely influential in climate science in the UK and globally. So they deal with weather, they deal with climate. They've got a joint unit with the Environment Agency on flooding. They have, of course, got a supercomputer. And one of the things the UK doesn't have is a very strong and effective a large compute infrastructure. So this supercomputer and the next one that they're going to get is an important part of that. They also deal with space weather and are an important source of information on potential impact of space weather, and are working with the Alan Turing Institute, looking at what AI might do to improve some of the ability to get greater granularity on weather forecasting, the sort of thing that's going to be really important as we think about adaptation to climate change. A fourth example, CFAS, so the Centre for Environment, Fisheries and Aquaculture Surveillance, which on this one is down in Weymouth, but it's actually got more sites as well. This does surveillance of fish stocks, surveillance of marine quality around the coast of the UK. It does research, it does policy work, and is an important part of the DEFRA stable again. And the institute where I'm now chair of the trustees, the Natural History Museum, has 350 scientists. And those 350 scientists work on a range of areas, including things directly relevant to government policy, such as climate research and biodiversity research. And using access to collections going back a very long period and around the world, have put together a biodiversity intactness index, which allows you to look around the world and say how much of the biodiversity that was present pre-industrial revolution, pre the appearance actually of mankind, is still present today. In the UK, we're about 50% of the biodiversity list. This biodiversity intactness index is now on Bloomberg terminals, so investors can start to look at it and say, what are companies doing? So unexpected links through to company and finance. And we're going to hear from Karen. The British Geological Survey has been unbelievably important during times of emergencies, particularly one thinks of volcanic situations where they become crucial to government decision making. So when I look around, you can see here, there are something like 50 public sector research establishments. They're all over the UK. They report not into a single department in government, but into 8 different departments. Maybe I'll have a quiz and say which one reports into the Department for Work and Pensions. There's very diverse expertise, and there's 17,000 science and technology staff. So my points that I want to make in this slide are the public sector research establishments are less well known than they should be. I didn't know about them, particularly before I joined government. I did a little bit. Paul Nurse's report illustrates how many people don't know about them. I think Paul himself wasn't particularly familiar with them before he started that. So these are hidden, and it's not just other scientists who don't know. I would wager that many ministers in those 8 departments haven't got a clue what PSREs sit under those departments. Some of them would not even know they had a PSRE. They are geographically dispersed. They do research, they do monitoring, they do policy, and they have links to business. They have vastly different funding models, so they're complete. Some of them are completely different. Some are private-public partnerships, some are privately run, but actually on behalf of the state. Some of them are totally public. They have different host departments, as I've said. They have different terms and conditions for the staff that work there, so actually it's quite difficult for people to move between them. And of course, as I've alluded to with the Met Office, but it's true for many others, they create an infrastructure which is important for science more broadly, and a capacity. So these are important, and David has already alluded to the fact that in 2019, together with Treasury, Government Office for Science wrote a report, the Science Capability Review, asking the question, what was the capability of science across government and what needed to happen? And one of the areas that we touched on was PSREs. And we said, there's lots of good ones, and there's lots of good things going on, but it's all a bit ad hoc and it's uncoordinated. And in fact, we also touched on an important area, which is how they might be involved in business and linking through into the economy. And we said there are a number of things that should happen because these are important parts of the R&D infrastructure. Departments need to ensure they have adequate long-term funding. Research funders need to open up funding schemes for the PSREs because a rather bizarre situation existed where certain PSREs could apply for a UKRI grant and others couldn't. And the ones that couldn't were largely not in the department where UKRI sat. Now, that doesn't make any sense from sort of government perspective. It may make sort of departmental sense, but it doesn't make government sense. We said that there ought to be a fund for innovation, and that as part of what was then the aim to get to 2.4% of GDP R&D, that this should be part of looking, part of that should be looking at what the public laboratories could do to be help with local business and growth agenda. Now, what's happened since then? Well, there was an update this year, which obviously I'd left by then, but the update of the Science Capability Review had one of the 4 things that it looked at was the public laboratories, and it still said ensure sufficient capacity, capability and quality within the public laboratories. And the government response to the review says the wide range of PSREs present a significant resource for government and will have a higher priority in government thinking. Good. What does that mean in practice? What's actually going to happen? It's quite important to pin that down. And there remains, I think, and it was clear in the review, a number of challenges. And maybe, you know, maybe the bottom bit's the thing to focus on. Progress has been made towards better utilisation of government-owned public laboratories. and expanding eligibility for funding streams. They are now able to apply for UKRI funding, but there are still challenges. The funding actually is often in a way that's very difficult for public labs to take because it's not full economic cost for them. And in many cases, the science missions of the public laboratories need to be better defined. So I'm going to end by talking about what I think are some key features of what would make a difference. And this relates to the current system, but I'll come on to what a future system might look like. The first is that every department should have a senior, accountable individual who actually cares about the PSREs in those departments. Now, every department does have somebody, but it's often part of somebody's job, and it's not necessarily a very senior person who's got that accountability. So the PSREs need somebody in the department who really cares about it, and a minister who really cares about the PSREs as part of their job. The department needs to define what they actually have got these PSREs for. What is it they want them to do? What is it that is important for the department that these PSREs can deliver? They need to have a system for quality assessment. How do they know that what's going on the PSREs is high quality science and relevant to the mission? And I think that's somewhere where the chief scientific advisors can really play a role. And they need to worry about career structures, because if individuals in a PSRE can only think of their career development in terms of the PSRE they currently happen to be in, that's a mistake. And I mentioned earlier the National Laboratory Alliance. This was set up on the back of the 2019 review. 11 PSREs got together and said, we can work better together, we can do things of common interest, we can share equipment, and we can look at staff promotion and development activities across, and that's still going. Those things, I think, would make a difference. But there's another point which I'll end on, which is there's now a Department of Science, Innovation and Technology. And one of the problems with the PSRE landscape across government is you could have every department looking after its own bit, as I said, and I think that does need to happen. But you need somewhere where you can look across the totality and ask, is it what we need? And what is what Paul Nurse in his recent report described as a national plan for R&D infrastructure? Where do these fit in? And I think I would argue that DSIT, the Department for Science, Innovation and Technology, could take that on as a cross-government accountability, not to own all the PSREs. I think they're rightly owned in the departments that they serve, but to ensure that we have the appropriate quality and we look across for opportunities. I will finish there. Thank you.